This podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 75,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/sword. Welcome to the Sword and Laser Podcast, episode number 34. I'm Veronica Belmont.
And I'm Tom Merritt.
And this is the science fiction and fantasy podcast where we talk about books we're reading and talk about stuff that's going on in the science fiction and fantasy world.
And look at us with three episodes in a row.
Is it three or is it four? Is it three? It's three.
I think it's three. But
we're doing it.
Yeah.
We are weekly.
The plan is working.
It's all going to fall apart next week when I'm at E3.
Oh.
Oh, wait, no, I'm not leaving until Tuesday. No, I'm leaving Monday night.
Oh, no.
Maybe we can record on Sunday night.
We could. Yeah,
we could.
I could record after East Meets West or something like that.
There you go. See, we have plans. Don't worry, guys.
Oh, we
will hold
plans.
It together. Somehow we will hold it together.
Yeah.
So this is going to be probably a shorter episode than usual. We don't have an author interview lined up this week. I know you guys were probably getting a little accustomed to that after 2 weeks in a row.
Yeah, we will announce our winner of our poll, though, so you can find out what book will be next in the book club.
Mm-hmm. And then I'm trying to work on some other interviews in the future. I got a lot of feedback about people enjoying those, so I think it's something we'll try to do more often.
Yeah, I've been enjoying them.
It's just myself. Fun to get to talk to people.
Yeah, and we've had such good people too. Yeah. Corey and Lori and Ian. I mean, and Daniel. I mean, just they're all. You don't know when you're like talking to an author because you've only read their work. You don't know what they're like. And then you get to talk to them. And we've been so lucky to have people who are really personable and smart and willing to have a conversation and spend time with us. You know, mm-hmm. They don't know us.
Totally. All right. Well, let's get to some news. First off, Neal Stephenson, an author we have read in the past, they're doing some kind of very interesting shared universe that's going to live online with him and Greg Bear and a few other people. Actually, anyone who wants to be a part of it can contribute.
Yeah, it's called The Mongoliad. And it will consist of a series of linked stories written by different writers in a Wikipedia-style concordance. So here's the quote. An ongoing stream of non-textual paranarrative and extra-narrative stuff, which we think brings the story to life in ways that are pleasingly unique and which can't be done in any single medium.
I like that. Non-contextual paranarrative and extra-narrative stuff.
That's me. I'm a paranarrative. I'm not a full narrative. I think what there's several ways to kind of figure out what they're going after here. One of which is to think of, say, Anathem, mm-hmm. or even the Baroque Cycle, if you've read that, and all of the ancillary world material, like all that glossary stuff from Anathem.
That could
be expanded on, and you could have wiki articles about all of that stuff, and you could have backstory, and you could really flesh that out, kind of the way people did with Lost, both people who were working on Lost and making like the Oceanic Airlines site, but then there were also other people creating materials around Lost, like on Lostpedia. So this is an effort to kind of build that from the ground up, and it's really interesting, and it's something, if anybody can pull it off, it's Neal Stephenson.
Well, it just makes me think of the worlds like C.S. Lewis and Tolkien and all these authors that build these amazingly intricate stories and have a whole world behind it that they've actually fleshed out. This reminds me of a very modern way of kind of doing that.
Yeah, it is not live yet, but you can go to mongoliad.com, M-O-N-G-O-L-I-A-D. We'll have it in the show notes, too, and take a look at the front page. But I guess Cory Doctorow got a sneak peek at it, and he says it's some very exciting media.
Yeah, so. I wonder. I'm really excited to see what kind of media is going to be included, if it's going to be like found footage or if it's going to be images and writing. it's going to be a pretty interesting project to follow.
Yeah, I can't wait to see it launch and possibly even get involved in some way.
Totally.
On to Neal Stephenson again in the news with turning the Diamond Age into a miniseries on Sci-Fi. You found this and put it up on the Goodreads forum.
Yeah, I mean, there's been a lot of interesting stuff coming out of Sci-Fi, although some commenters, like Tom Mahoney, for example, said Sci-Fi Channel is dead to me. But maybe this will bring them back. Who knows?
You know, this is one of those things that could go either way, right? Sci-Fi or SIFI or whatever they're called these days can do really amazing stuff like Battlestar Galactica.
Of course.
They can do some really interesting sort of experimental offbeat stuff like Tin Man. And then they can do like
and Red
giant
that
piranhas.
Felicia's working on.
Oh, yeah. And Red. So and then there's also the things like Warehouse 13, which I like, but I know a lot of people don't. And there's the weekend crazy, silly giant piranha movies, which I think are hilarious, but they're not really good.
I like the dinosaur movies myself.
Yeah.
Like the raptors coming into modern day, you know, kind of like Jurassic Park, except way more low budget. It's very fascinating.
So the producer on this is George Clooney.
Really? I missed that part. Where'd you see that? Oh, yeah. Sorry. That was in my description also. I forgot about that part.
They'll produce it for Smokehouse Pictures, and I guess Neal Stephenson had to sign off at some point.
Yeah, I haven't read The Diamond Age, have you?
Yeah, I read it a long time ago, and it's an early Stephenson. So
95.
Yeah, it's not as it's not as rich and thick as the like Cryptonomicon or Anathem. It's a little faster paced. It's a little more in that early cyberpunk feel. And so in that way, it kind of lends itself better to television.
Yeah, the full name of the book is The Diamond Age or A Young Lady's Illustrated Primer.
Yeah, the idea is that one man believes creativity has been stifled and creates an interactive book for his daughter, who uses it as a guide through a surreal alternate world. So there's a lot about avatars and a proto-internet sort of society that in some ways foreshadows what we have today in certain parts.
Very cool. And then another kind of cyberpunk story that is in the news lately is When Gravity Fails.
Yeah, you know what? It's funny. I picked this up when I was living in Arlington, Virginia. I was in downtown Washington, D.C., and I found the book on the shelf with a ripped cover, and I really didn't have a lot of money, so I brought it up to the front, and I was like, hey, can you give me a discount on this book? It has a ripped cover. And that was the only reason I picked it, because I wanted a sci-fi book, and I got a discount, and it was really interesting, and I had no idea if he was popular at all, but the idea was that the world had pretty much become predominantly Muslim, and yet it had also become predominantly technological. So there are rocket ships and spaceships and all sort of things, but it's happening in a non-Christian world. And it's also told in this film noir style, right? It's this kind of, you know, like I knew she was a, you know, danger when she walked in the door kind of tone to it. And that's what Cory Doctorow calls it on Boing Boing, Middle Eastern cyberpunk. I mean, that's kind of what I'm circling around here.
Yeah, and the reason it's in the news is because Joe Walton is writing about it on Tor.com, critical essays on classic works of science fiction. And so this is one of the ones that she's writing about.
Yeah, these are, if you're really into the deep criticism of science fiction novels, you might want to check these out. Tor.com, of course, Tor is a great publisher of good sci-fi novels, and Tor.com has a lot of excellent content, and this is an example of that. Joe Walton has done several of these sorts of super critical essays. And when I say super critical, I don't mean like she picks
on them. No, just very in-depth.
Literarily critical, yeah.
Yeah, I would love to pick some of those up and save them for reading at some point. Do you use Instapaper at all?
Yeah, I do. I use that a lot of times actually to save stuff for Sword and Laser.
Oh, neat.
Because I'm always, you know, every day I'm in there putting links in for Tech News Today and for Current Geek Weekly. Mm-hmm. But I don't want to have another spreadsheet open. And so I actually use Instapaper for that.
And then finally in news today, we talk a lot about alternate history. And there's a great post on IO9 about what would happen if the Roman Empire didn't fall, and all the books that deal with that very subject matter.
Yeah, and this kind of goes along with our talk last time about end of the world. Where do they really blow up the Earth? this is a list of, like, the Roman Empire just never falls, and they end up going to space. I haven't read these books. They've got a couple here. The Silent Stars Go by James White. Rome Burning by Sophia McDougall, and the Oath of Empire series from Thomas Harlan.
Yeah,
have you dipped into any of these?
No, I haven't read any of these. And then they've got Quietus by Jacek Inglot. Jacek?
Yeah, that's why I was leaving that one out.
I know, Jacek Inglot.
That's not fair.
Jacek Inglot?
Yeah.
I don't even know where that name comes from. I shouldn't try to fake accents for things that I don't. Did you know that I can't do accents?
I
like literally cannot do them. Like when I tried to do it, you knew that. Oh, yeah. Can't do them. Nope. They never sound like I want them to sound.
Do a wicked Boston accent.
That's the only one I can do, guy.
Because you're from Connecticut.
Dude, guy. Yeah. Dude. Park the car and have it yard.
See, there. It's like I'm there. It's like I'm living there.
There you go. That makes me feel a little bit better.
All right.
But hey, we should move on to the Bear Your Sword category. Feedback from our audience taken from the forums on Goodreads.com. And one of the interesting things I've seen pop up is the what else are you reading discussions. And they've been happening for the past few months. And I've noticed them in other book groups as well. And I think it's a really interesting way to keep up on what everyone is reading that month. And if they're, you know, taking a long time to read a book, for example, or if they found something interesting that they want to share with the group. And there's some pretty good ones for June.
Yeah, this is a rich vein of ideas for other books. If you're in between Sword and Laser picks, or if you just don't like the one we're picking at the time and you want something else to read, you can dive into this. And there's great recommendations, not just lists of titles, but justifications or explanations of, you know, why you might be reading this or that. The Magician's A Novel last night and stayed up until 4 before I put it down was Bongo's post. That's the kind of thing I'm like, okay, that must have something to it if it kept somebody up until 4.
Well,
so
yeah.
Thanks to Sean for starting this thread.
Yeah, it seems like someone new starts it every month. Actually, I picked up The Blade Itself by Joe Abercrombie last month because of that thread. Last month's thread, of course. And it's been great so far. I hear, though, it is a trilogy, I believe, and that the third book maybe slows down a little bit and kind of loses its oomph.
Oh, that's disappointing when the final one loses.
Yeah, I'm not sure if it's a second or third one when it starts getting a little iffy for some people. But I'm going to stick with it, you know, at least get through the first one, see how it goes, and see if it's a trilogy to continue on.
Also being discussed on the Goodreads group is your zombie apocalypse contingency plan. This thread started by Veronica.
Yes.
You wrote, if and when the zombie apocalypse hits, do you have a plan of action?
Yes, there are a lot of factors, of course, like are they fast zombies or are they lumberers?
Sure.
Actually, lurkers, this is roamers, related to a topic that... What? Lumberers? What? What are you saying?
Lurkers, roamers, biters.
Lurkers, aren't they all biters?
There's some that aren't as quite as bitey.
Because they're not chit-chatterers.
Yeah.
They're not conversationalists. Roamers
is from the Walking Dead comic book series, which is actually what I've been reading the most of lately. I've tore through all 66 issues of that.
Well, very interestingly, we have a big discussion going on between Cameron and Sean on this thread. They're actually going back and forth between the best plans of action. Cameron says, it's all about first come, first serve. Even the best plans fall apart if you aren't executing it right away. Sure, Costco sounds like a great place to board yourself up in with all that food, clothing, and exercise equipment. But if you aren't the first one there, don't count on getting in. Same with weapons.
Mm-hmm.
Chances are you won't be at the weapon store before everyone else. Then you have zombies and desperate paranoid people with sharpened blades and loaded firearms to contend with. It's true.
That's a good point. I threw into the thread zombieinitiative.org because not only are they going to help you prepare for the zombie apocalypse, but they will teach you valuable first aid knowledge along the way.
Yeah, it's important to know. And some people said maybe you should go above the snow line in the mountains, but there are reasons you should not do that. I don't know if you know this, but zombies, if frozen, can actually be thawed.
Ah, yeah. They're not dead.
No.
Because they're undead.
It's the same with trying to go to like some like shallow island of some kind, yeah, or trying to wade out to a safer place because they'll just hold their breath. They don't need to breathe.
I think Noel will be one of the first to go, though, because he says, I have a problem taking zombies seriously. In my opinion, they could be a bit of fun, but this is not sci-fi or fantasy, but cheesy horror. Hmm. Zombies are boring. Zombies are cliche. I just cannot really immerse myself in zombie stories. I just don't really get zombies. You know what? Zombies are going to get you.
Yeah. And you know what? I think the author of our next book would disagree with you mightily. And that's because our next book is chosen by the poll that we took over the past week is World War Z, An Oral History of the Zombie War by Max Brooks.
And this podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 75,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature and featuring audio versions of many New York Times bestsellers, as well as World War Z, An Oral History of the Zombie War by Max Brooks. For listeners of this podcast, Audible is offering a free audiobook, so you can get it for free. Just go and go ahead your browser to audiblepodcast.com/sword, and you can pick up World War Z for free, just as a trial. It's read by Max Brooks, as well as Alan Alda, John Turturro, and Rob Reiner.
And Mark Hamill.
And Mark Hamill?
Yeah.
I didn't see Mark
Henry
Hamill.
Rollins.
This is something.
Yeah, this is all according to Ben, who wrote about it on the introduction thread. So if he's lying about that Henry Rollins, I'm going to be mad.
If
I love Henry Rollins.
Are afraid that you might be bored by reading the book, you could try to get it from Audible. So once again, audiblepodcast.com/sword. But any way we do it.
Yeah, frankly, you know, I have to do make a little disclaimer. I have read the book.
Me too.
And it is, it doesn't quite fit into science fiction or fantasy, maybe fantasy.
It was on the IO9 list.
It was, but I have to say, it is, it gets a little scary. Like, it
really?
Gets
you thought it gets scary?
I thought there were some uncomfortable moments.
Well, it's so, it's done in the style of documentary.
Yeah.
So this is not your traditional story where it's like, here I was walking down the road. It's done as if these are interviews that have been done with people telling about what happened at certain points during the before, during, and after the zombie war. And so there's documents and interviews and transcripts and things like that. And I felt that kind of distanced you a bit.
See, I felt the opposite. I felt it really drew me in and made me feel very emotionally invested in the people because I felt like they were more real in a way.
Yeah.
And I felt a little bit unnerved while I was reading it at some points because it does feel so real to me. And I wonder if the audiobook makes you feel that same way. But this is not one that you want to read to your kids like before bed.
No.
If they happen to participate in the Sword and Laser as well. It's a little more, I don't know. It freaked me out a little bit. I remember reading it. I read it over Christmas break, actually, when I was home with my family. And I remember reading it in bed at night and being like, oh, whoa. Okay. Yeah. All right. Yeah,
it might not be the best thing to read for some people right before you go to sleep.
I've been having that problem lately.
Yeah.
Reading things and watching things like video games.
Yeah, don't eat
and
cheese and read World War Z right before you go to sleep.
It's eat ice cream for me.
Yeah, ice cream.
Ice cream gives me nightmares.
Yeah, anything that's hard to digest. Dairy or anything.
Is that it, really? It's dairy?
You know what? That's what
I thought it was
the
sugar.
My teacher said in junior high. I have no idea if that's true.
Hmm. Well, don't eat ice cream, eat cheese, and then read World War Z right before you go to bed.
And don't get eaten by a zombie.
Especially do not get eaten by a zombie. But yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing everyone's reactions to this book because I loved it. I read it over the course of like 3 or 4 days. I just totally consumed it like a zombie eating brains.
Yes. It was a tasty dish of brains for my literary zombie.
A tasty, tasty dish of brains. but we've got other books on the poll too that I'm hoping maybe come back around, like The Blade itself, for example. I'd like to do that for the book club at some point. And you had some other picks too. I can't remember what they are now.
I had picked something else. what did I pick?
I can't remember what my other one was either. Okay, you picked Shadow and Claw.
Oh, Shadow and Claw, yeah, which got a mixed reaction I saw in the thread on the poll. Some people were like, yes, absolutely love this book. I'd read it again, no problem. And other people are like, don't do it. It's slow and dull and boring. and I'll never touch it again. This isn't the first time I've thrown out Shadow and Claw. And the reason I do is because it is sword and laser. Like, it is very definitely cross camp.
Mm-hmm.
And the setting is, you know, in a far, far distant future, when technology has broken down but still is around. And there's, you know, and you follow at the beginning a torturer. He is by profession a torturer, and he's going and
in Shadow and Claw.
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting, because the Blade itself also has a central torturer character.
Interesting.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Hmm. And then the Divine Misfortune is one that I actually was recommended to me by a clerk at Borders at the Westfield Shopping Center. And he said that it was great and very funny. So I'm hoping to pick that one up, too, at some point.
Well, we will have a formal kickoff for World War Z next week. We'll either kind of dig into a little bit more preparation than we gave you today, give you a chance to get the book. And possibly we can maybe rustle up Mr. Brooks.
Yeah, I sent feelers out to see if he's willing to do an interview. Hopefully we'll hear something that would be awesome, that'd be really, really cool. And if not, then there's so many other authors that we'd love to hear from. So absolutely, we'll just have to, if you guys want to hear from anyone in particular or know any authors that would like to be on the show, drop us an email at theswordandlaser@gmail.com or start a thread in the Goodreads forum. That works too.
And we got a couple of emails. Oh, sorry.
No, go ahead. You finish.
I was going to say, we got a couple of emails. One from Ross, who said, you asked about stories where the Earth was destroyed. Beastmaster by Andre Norton. Not actually destroyed in the book, but dealing with the aftermath. That's close, isn't it?
Yeah.
She was awesome.
That's pretty close. And then Simon says, Stephen Baxter has a tendency to destroy the Earth in a number of his books, notably Moonseed. Earth is wiped out completely starting in the opening scene. Oh, we've read this email already.
Oh, did we already?
Yeah.
It got put in again.
That's okay. Well, it's still
thanks,
good
Simon.
Suggestions. Yeah, Moonseed,
yes.
Evolution, and Flood. He's one of Simon's favorite laser authors. So now you've heard from Simon twice on the matter.
We'll go ahead and read Kent's then.
Okay, Kent says, somebody has probably mentioned this, but in When Worlds Collide by George Pal, the Earth is destroyed due to an impact with another planet. Happily, there is another planet that arrives at the same time, and some people move there. You know, all the people that weren't
handy.
Crushed in the collision.
Right.
I guess. They were probably off-planet at the time.
Those crushed people didn't go anywhere.
Nope. All right. Well, I think that's all we got for our show today. Make sure to check out our partner, StickerFoo. I use the code SWORD1 and get 10% off the stickers at www.stickerfu.com. All sorts of great geeky and sci-fi fantasy-related stuff.
Until next time, swordandlaser.com is our website where you can find links and descriptions of the stuff we talked about in the show. You can email us, theswordandlaser@gmail.com.
Bye, guys.
Bye.